the music in the air.
We don't want to encourage piracy.
What they should go after is the pirates, I guess.
Don't get mad because I say it. Don't get mad if they play it. Turn the radio on. Don't like it.
Still have a radio. Anyone here at all? Anyone here at all?
I am a pirate. I should be arrested.
Anyone
jailed or fined.
It's Sunday, April 9th, 2006.
Almost live from the Fooking Ionosphere, it's the Pirates Week with Ragnar Danisjold.
Do we have a show for you today? This is Ragnar Danisjold, and you are listening to The Pirates Week, a podcast serving the shortwave pirate radio community. We take a look into the past week's pirate activity, what's going on over at the Free Radio Network, an odd tech tip or two, general free radio and DXing news, the propagation forecast, throw in a little pod-safe music in the background, and it's The Pirates Week. I do have a major announcement I wish to share with all of you. If you remember, starting in 2004, a new pirate, or somebody started airing an old pirate, Radio First Termer, Dave Rabbit, who broadcasted his pirate radio show during the Vietnam era. He was broadcasting out of Saigon in 1970. Someone got a hold of his tapes and started airing them about 2004. He did an interview with About.com, Corey Dietz, a couple months ago, and then did a follow-up interview last month, which I covered in the last podcast. Well, I've been in contact with the famous Dave Rabbit, and he has made himself available for an interview. In fact, we talked quite a bit, most of the time yesterday, got a lot of it on tape, and hopefully by next week I can put it all together. I have a great interview with a great broadcaster who brought a lot of happiness and a lot of smiles to the troops back in the Vietnam War. It'll probably take two podcasts. I'll break it up over two separate podcasts to air the interview. It would not surprise me if we will be hearing quite a bit more from Radio First Termer Dave Rabbit on these shortwave pirate radio bands. So keep an ear out for Dave Rabbit, Radio First Termer, the Big 69.
Live from the Ho Chi Minh Memorial Whorehouse and Delicatessen, where our motto is great sandwiches and great whores. This is your host, Dave Rabbit. Hi, everyone. I just got through doing a really fun podcast interview with my personal hero, Ragnar, and he's going to be making it available to each of you on one of his upcoming podcast shows. So mark the date that he gives you. Quit whacking off. And get ready for a roller coaster ride from hell! Until then, peace, my brothers and sisters. Peace.
Okay, today we're talking with Dave Rabbit of Radio First Termer. That was a famous pirate radio station that was active during the Vietnam War. Thank you for coming to the podcast here at the Pirates Week, Dave.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, I have to say, I first heard of Radio First Termer, that somebody put a broadcast out of your material on the shortwave band 6925 back in 2004, and I believe it was a recording off of one of your old shows. Ever since then, there has been a buzz in the shortwave pirate community about who you were and where those original broadcasts came from, and that kind of started a bit of a scavenger hunt of trying to find, at least in our community, who you were and the work you did back then. And that has been really, really fortunate that you would come forward as you have to the program. That's great.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's been kind of a weird road that got us to this conversation.
Okay, so when were your original broadcasts?
The show actually aired for 21 days from January 1st, 1971 to January 21st, 1971. So basically 21 days was the entire broadcast.
And you were active military at the time.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I was what they call a buck sergeant, three striper in the Air Force.
And you had a bit of an unusual studio at the time. Where were you broadcasting from?
We were broadcasting from Saigon Whorehouse that we set up as a studio because we couldn't broadcast, obviously, from the Air Force Base. That would be a little bit obvious.
So did you actually have a transmitter at the Whorehouse, or you were using the American Forces Vietnam Network relay system, weren't you?
Yeah, the guys that I had met when we were at Phan Rang, they really were the geniuses to this whole operation. And basically, and of course, I'm not a technical person by nature, just kind of a voice, if you will. When we found our location in the Whorehouse in Saigon, we set our room up. The guys from Phan Rang contacted the guys in the Saigon relay area. And they came and they wired us. They went to the rooftop of the Whorehouse that we were at, and they did a dish or whatever to boost the signal to where it went to the local Saigon relay station, and then from there it just piggybacked and went throughout Southeast Asia through the other relay stations.
So your signal was really pretty much covering all of Vietnam and into Cambodia and Laos, I suppose?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, in fact, it's really funny because we had some emails that Will Snyder, who is my agent now, in my opinion, the person that really started the Internet phenomenon of Radio First Termer, and he has emails that date back 11 or 12 years, and there's some emails in there from people that were in Cambodia and in Laos that heard the show. So we know we went over into those areas also.
Well, you gave a really nice interview to Corey Dietz on About.com that explained a lot of the background. You previously in that interview stated that most of your equipment came from the Midnight Supply Company. You just kind of piecemealed it together, correct?
Yeah, but, you know, don't misunderstand. Some of the speculation was, well, you know, the show was awfully good for, you know, throwing together equipment. But, you know, we had, like, top-of-the-line Akai reel-to-reel decks. I mean, we had top-of-the-line stuff. It was, like, brand new from, like, the base exchange supply. It wasn't like the regular Air Force supply, but because I was in supply and had supply contacts, you know, it was very easy to get the top-of-the-line equipment, you know, for that particular era.
Now, how long did that take you to put all the equipment together and get your room in the whorehouse? And might I add that broadcasting from a whorehouse in the middle of the Vietnam War, that goes beyond poetic.
Yeah, definitely like getting screwed by the military one way or the other. Yeah, you know, what's really funny is... initially, we knew we couldn't record and do the show and do all the stuff that we needed to do on the base. There was just no way. Pete had contacts, I'm sure, because of his numerous trips there with a madam. Once we found we were like on the sixth or seventh floor. It's like an eight-story hotel / whorehouse. And once we found the room that we needed, I mean, you know, we were right next door to other rooms that were being either rented out or being used for whorehouse activities. And we couldn't afford to be in there doing a show and all this, oh, Ralph, or something like that, you know, going on. So we acquired through Midnight Supply some cork tiles, like 12 by 12 cork tiles. Put them all over the walls, including the door. Also got an endless supply of mattresses and put those up against the wall and had them all tied together and stuff. And we did some sound tests, and once we were sure that, you know, we couldn't be heard, you know, we were good to go, basically.
You just mentioned that you had some really good reel-to-reel tapes. Now, were most of your material all on tape, or did you do mostly live?
You know, the live stuff that we did was like the latrine wall sayings, almost, you know, 99.9% of that was live. The music was all taped. We had pre-taped all the music on the reels. We had pre-taped almost 30 days worth of Captain Pansy's weather report and just some different commercials, funny stuff that we did. And then as we'd read things in Stars and Stripes or hear things, comments made that was on AFVN, if there was something in particular we wanted to respond to, then we either recorded it that day before we went on air or we did it live. And a lot of times when we did it live, you know, we were really flying by the seat of our pants because we just had no safety net when we did the show.
How long were the broadcasts? You know, how long were you on air at any one time?
Okay, our broadcasts were 3 hours. We would start at 8 o'clock at night, cut off at 11 o'clock at night, so it was a 3 hour gig, and we did that for 21 days straight.
So it was every night straight.
Yeah, every night from the 1st to the 21st, 8 to 11 every night.
Now you didn't come into the radio thing cold. You had some previous radio experience?
Only limited. When I was at Phan Rang, which was a year prior to when I arrived at Tonsonute Saigon, my roommate at the time was in the broadcast group, and they had. That's about the time that the AFVN made the decision that they wanted to have the individual air bases start their own radio programs to where it was more localized for like 3 hours at a stretch. And that's really where the three-hour concept came in, because at Phan Rang, we did the same basic thing, of course, legitimately, and it was FM also, and it was like from 8 to 11. And so that's how that three-hour scenario came in when we got to Radio First Term and decided to do that in Saigon, was based as kind of an offshoot of the things I had learned as studio engineer for Radio Phan Rang.
So after the 21-day run, what prompted you to go off air?
You know, there was a lot of people gradually that knew about us. There was a huge underground movement going on at the time, and there was a pretty significant anti-war mentality among both officer and enlisted men. And people that enjoyed the show, enjoyed the things that we were saying, the comedy aspect of the thing. It was nothing like AFVN was doing. AFVN had occasionally come up with some funny stuff, but it was pretty much very censored, very militaristic concept, and, you know, they were very restricted on what they would say. So there was a lot of people that really wanted us to be heard, and, you know, the ones that really were protecting us were people that were supposed to be looking for us. And on the 21st, a guy came up to me that was with security police and one of the people that was responsible for trying to find us at the time and just said, you guys need to stop because the pressure's become so intense that they're, you know, that some of us are going to get in trouble because they're finding it hard to believe that we can't find you guys. So we said, okay, that's it. And so that night, Pete Nugent and I told him when we arrived at the studio that we had to stop. So we finished that show, and at the end of the show, I just said, you know, good night, Vietnam, and good luck. And that was it. We cut off and gave the equipment to the madam as part of our rents. Well, we walked out that door in the back, in the alley, and went back to the base. Nothing was ever said about it again as far as the three of us went. From that point on, we walked away and said, you know, it was a good run, and that was the end of it.
You know, I know quite a few pirates that would really like to get the heads up from the authorities before they actually got busted, so you were very fortunate there. How long did you stay in country after you went off air? There's been a lot of speculation on that.
Initially, I was supposed to get out on my birthday, which is August 15th. I went in on my birthday, and I was supposed to get out on my birthday, but the Air Force had a deal where if you wanted to go back to school, they give you an opportunity to have what they called an early out. So I was pretty much bored with the military by then. I was bored with the military long before then, but I was really bored with the military, you know, after, you know, we didn't have a show anymore, and, I mean, you know, I was just doing my normal Air Force job, and I was anxious to get home and get on with my life, and I took the opportunity, and I got out in May of 71 as opposed to August.
When you did come home, did you do any radio-related stuff? You didn't go into radio at all?
Although I really wanted to get into broadcasting, it was really a dream of mine. It's something I really just enjoyed doing. It was something that, you know, just really put my blood on boil. But because of family obligations and my dad in ill health and, you know, it really was a decision that was made for me. It wasn't that I didn't want not to continue in broadcasting. It's just that, you know, the circumstances were that, you know, that was not the hand that was dealt to me.
Okay, let's fast forward 30 years now. Well, when did you realize people still remembered the Radio First Termer broadcasts?
Well, you know, the very first time that I actually even knew that someone had recorded the show was in 1982. I am at a party and talking to some people, and I meet this guy, and we start talking, and he says, well, hey, did you ever serve in the military? I said, yeah. I said, how about you? He said, yeah, I was in the Army, stationed at Wiesbaden, Germany. And I said, really? And I said, okay. I said, well, I was in Vietnam. And he goes, hey, did you ever hear of Dave Rabbit? And I said, how do you know about Dave Rabbit? And he said, oh, man, he's popular as hell over in Germany. And I'm going, how can he be popular in Germany? I said, you know, his show, you know, didn't exist after 71. He said, oh, man, he says, somebody's recorded one of his shows, and they're making copies, and everybody's making copies. And, I mean, it's just hundreds and hundreds of copies, you know, they're flowing everywhere. So, you know, of course, I was just shocked. And I said, well, I said, I'm Dave Rabbit. He goes, yeah, sure you are. You know, I'm Adolf Hitler. I said, no, seriously, I'm Dave Rabbit. He said, well, you know, do one of your stuff. And so I, you know, kind of went into Krabs Can Pole Vault, you know, and did some little shtick for him. He goes, damn, you are Dave Rabbit. He said, man, you really made my day. I said, no, brother, you've made mine. And then he made me a copy of the tape. Now, in answer to your question, February 9th, 2006, my kid is a senior in high school right now. My last kid, thank God. And he's doing a report, a history report, and I told him, I said, well, you know, I since I did my tours in Vietnam, I said, you know, maybe I can find you some stuff on Vietnam that'll, you know, help you with the report. And I'm on the internet, February 9th, 2006, and I'm clicking through some Vietnam sites, and I come across a site that has audio clips, and I go down, and there's a couple of clips there. It says Radio First Termer, and I'm going, what is this? I click on, and sure enough, it goes to the homepage of Radio First Termer that Will Snyder created, and I see all these MP3 click-ons where you can download the entire show, and all these little theoretical what happened to Dave Rabbit scenarios. And that's really 35 years later from the time that the show existed that I found out that there's a parallel life of me going on without my knowledge. It really blew me away.
Yeah, that had to be really, had to really blow your mind. Now, you have some material coming out in the movie Sir No Sir, right? How did that happen?
Well, one of the sites that was there, I mean, there was a bunch of them, like Vietnam Veterans Association, and there's one site called Above Top Secret, where it's nothing but conspiracy theories and X-Files and black helicopters. It's really an amazing site. And there was like they were saying on that one that I was a conspiracy of the government, that the government created Dave Rabbit. And so one of the sites that I came across was Sir No Sir. And it's amazing. You know, I click on to it, and, you know, here's a whole page of nothing but audio clips from the show. And then I come to find out that the reason why they had me on there is that they've used two or three clips from the show, the only show that is in existence that was recorded, on their movie. And then from there, I start contacting David Zeiger, who is the producer, director of Sir No Sir. It's kind of his project. He and I talk. And we have developed just an amazing friendship and relationship. And that's when he said, you know, well, you know, we're only using some of your clips for the show. And then other than that, he wants, when the DVD is released to the public, he wants to have like a special features section. And in the special features section, I have produced a music bio video DVD that he's going to put in the special features. And then we're also probably going to do like a physical interview that'll just be part of that special features package, which will help sell his DVDs to the public. Pretty much it.
Do you know when that DVD is coming out to the market?
Well, the movie is not even coming out till May. If it runs from May to June, I'd say probably July to August, the DVD will be available.
Oh, that's cool. Now, I hear there's also a possibility of a documentary coming out, too.
Yeah, we're working with a company right now called Chance Films. And it's owned and co-founded by Leslie Neal, who is this real famous producer-director of over 20 years. And her husband, who's is John Densmore. And John Densmore is the one of the original founders of the band The Doors. So it's kind of a really neat possible marriage. It's not in concrete yet, but it's like 99% concrete that we're going to give them like an 18-month option to where they can go out and see and kind of sell Dave Rabbit and Radio First Herbert and kind of see where we go. Our ideas are anywhere from a documentary, which would involve going back to Vietnam and retracing the steps, the three tours that I did to get to Radio First Herbert, also doing like a movie. That's one of the options that we've discussed. Another option that we've discussed is like a TV series, like a Band of Brothers on HBO, something along that line.
That sounds really nice.
HBO would be, well, you know, with all the language in the station and stuff, I mean, there was no way we could do it on like NBC or ABC. So we'd have to have something that would be like HBO where we could, make it authentic language.
Right. Well, what else is really neat is I'm sure on the Big 69 you were playing The Doors, so you bit of a full circle there with The Doors connection.
Yeah, and what's really funny is, in fact, one of the things that we were discussing when we were talking about in the preliminary stages, you know, I told him, I said, you know, that we had done Doors music. One of the things that the show that was recorded, there's one song from Iron Butterfly, and we originally did the long version of Inagata La Vida on one of the shows, but I mean that thing lasted, you know, what, 22 minutes or whatever.
That's the bathroom break.
That was half our show.
That's the bathroom break album. You can just put it on and head down the hall.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, you can clean your entire house by the time that song's through. The neat thing about the possible marriage with Chance Films is because of John and his relationship, and being founding of The Doors, he knows so many rockers from that era. And as you well know, there's a lot of legal copyright and whatever that's involved, in a legalized version, to do anything. And having him, if it happens, having him be part of that family is going to make it so much easier, because the rock music is a lot of the story also. I mean, Radio First Termer is the story. You know, I just happen to be the host, but the music is part of the story. I mean, it's a major part of the story. You take out the rock music of Radio First Termer, and you don't have Radio First Termer. So it's extremely critical, extremely critical.
If I understand it, I mean, that was all part of the counterculture, was the rock music, and the AFN was not going to have that on any of their stations. So you were the only outlet.
No, they didn't have rock music. They were like a top 40 bubble, what I call bubblegum music. You would never hear Blood Rock. You would never hear Iron Butterfly. You know, you would never hear The Doors. You would never hear groups that really, Steppenwolf is not even a question that you wouldn't hear him, you know. Now, one thing you have to understand is the catalyst for the show was not for Air Force guys, even though I was an Air Force guy, because we're sitting on Air Force bases, and although, you know, our lives were at risk also, the show was intended for the guys in the field. Army and Marines, those two guys. You know, the Navy guys, they're on ships out in the middle of the ocean.
the Army and the Marine guys, the guys that were day-to-day putting their lives on the line, those guys only was what Radio First Termer was about. And the whole catalyst, the whole reason why we wanted to do the show is for those guys to go, hey, man, right on, you know, and give them a laugh, a smile, you know, because their next minute that they may have may be in confrontation, and they may end up going home in a body bag. And those guys are the ones we did the show for.
Well, if they're still talking about it 30 years later, you definitely made an impact. That's for sure. I was reading the articles in About.com that you did with Corey Dietz. I think there's three or four that he posted. Have you done any other articles that people can access? Any other interviews?
You know, we've got some radio interviews other than this one, which, by the way, I want to take this opportunity, Ragnar, to tell you that, you know, I am a real fan, and I just really want to tip my hat not only to you but to all the pirate radio people all over the world that are doing it, because it's just amazing. And I mean, it's just a thumbs up, a four rabbits up, you know, salute to each of you guys for what you've done. Now, you asked me about other interviews, and what I meant to tell you before I got sidebarred was that we're gonna do something for public radio that's gonna be on the national public radio frequencies or whatever coming up probably May or June, and that's gonna be kind of neat. It's gonna be like they're going some kind of documentary kind of thing about people in history or whatever. And not that I'm anything historical at all, but I guess there was enough interest that they wanted to do an interview with me. So that's coming up. I'm doing another interview that's going to be with the Clear Channel Network, which is a company that owns like 147 rock stations throughout the world. And I'm going to be doing an interview with them probably in the next couple of weeks. But other than that, you know, we're just kind of doing the movie thing and kind of doing stuff on the website and you know, going to do some things, hopefully with you down the way, where we do a special program for Pirate Radio and just got a lot of things going on. Open to any ideas, though, if you got them.
Well, I assure you, if you put some new material out there that somebody, not me, but somebody will put it out over the Pirate Radio airwaves, that's for sure. You mentioned your website, Will Snyder's website. You know the address of that?
Yeah, it's real easy. We acquired the Vietnam websites. It's just radiofirstermer.com.vn, which VN stands for Vietnam. So radiofirstermer.com.vn. And that puts you to our homepage, and then on the homepage we have you know, a lot of connections, including to your site. It has the Sir No Sir shortcut on it, and above Top Secret and Corey Dietz, and just some interesting places to go.
Really, thank you for coming on the Pirates Week and coming on the broadcast and kind of reminiscing over what you've been doing back in the Vietnam days, and I really appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome, and
from the boat anchor Soft Glow to your MP3 player via the World Wide Web, we meld the oldest and the newest audio technology. Welcome to the Pirates Week, piratesweek.tripod.com.
You are without doubt the worst pirate I've ever heard of.
But you have heard of me.